This week on the Northwest Politicast.
As the World Cup begins, what does it mean for Seattle and the country?
Thinking about the politics of soccer and the use of sport as a tool for economic development and also a tool of diplomacy.
Plus, security will be extraordinarily tight, especially when Iran's team comes to town.
There will be a zero tolerance policy that we have in effect. And we will be aggressively pursuing violators of those laws.
And combating violence and prostitution in North Seattle.
We also heard from the city attorney who said she's trying to get extreme risk protection orders to try and get guns out of the hands of both pimps and the Johns if they're found up there with guns.
Now, here's Northwest News Radio's Jeff Pulgilla.
Well, as always, there's a lot to get to this week as we deal with record temperatures and the start of the World Cup. But oddly enough, athletics is where we're going to begin. Using soccer as an example, sport has rarely been free of politics. From the 1936 Olympics in Berlin, when Jesse Owens embarrassed the Nazi regime by winning 4 gold medals, to the NFL's Colin Kaepernick taking a knee during the national anthem. And this year's World Cup is no exception. For a closer look at the political implications of the U.S. hosting the tournament, here's Northwest News Radio's Denise Whitaker.
If you're not entirely convinced that sports are political, spend a few minutes with the director of UW Global Sport Lab, Ron Crable, also a professor at the University of Washington, Bothell, more than loves the game of soccer. He's studied it and the World Cups that have been held in Spain and South Africa. He looks at where the money flows, who can afford to attend, the pressures FIFA and the federal government put on local organizing committees. With much to cover, I started by asking him about the level of enthusiasm here in Seattle. With 4 years to prepare for this, some have called attention to what they say appears to be a lack of excitement and hospitality.
What is striking is that in other World Cup cities at this point, it would be unavoidable. Every restaurant you would walk into, every street you would walk down, there would be World Cup stuff going on, songs playing, flags up, all sorts of markers of it. So I do think it's less that, like, right now it's sort of less pervasive than it is in other cities or would be in other cities. But I also think that the city is getting there. I think there's a building excitement, a building vibe.
How do you think Seattle and or any of the fan zones will end up maximizing the benefits that we can get?
Yeah, it's a great question. I mean, really, the big question with the benefits is oftentimes it's posed as one big number, you know, 750,000 visitors or, you know, tens of billions of economic activity generated. And I think the key is to really think about that not as one big number, but sort of say, where is that activity, economic activity going? Who is it going to? Is it small local businesses that are benefiting, or is it large corporations that are benefiting? Is it being extracted into FIFA? I think there's a much more complex story to what the economic impact of the tournament is. Mm-hmm. In terms of the non-tangible benefits, you know, a lot of it really is about that excitement, that vibe that gets built up in a city that hosts the sort of camaraderie of connecting with people from all around the world. And so part of the question is if that will really take hold, if people in Seattle will have a chance to really connect with people from all over the world.
I'm speaking with Ron Crable, professor at the University of Washington, Bothell, also director of the UW Global Sport Lab. So, Ron, studying sports, you originally started focusing on soccer during the FIFA World Cup when it was happening in South Africa, right? I mean, what did you learn? What are you carrying forward in all of your research, especially as we host matches now?
So I first got really involved in thinking about soccer from an academic perspective when South Africa was hosting. My earlier academic work was on democracy and media in South Africa during the late apartheid and era and then into the transition to democracy. And so when the World Cup was held there, there were a lot of the same kinds of questions. Where is all this money going to? You had a government that was really struggling to provide basic needs for its people, schools, infrastructure, that sort of thing, that was suddenly spending huge amounts of money to build stadiums in places, some of which were in places that would barely get used after the World Cup. And so one of the things that I really learned from that experience is what it's like to sort of be excited about something like the World Cup and South Africa hosting the World Cup and also critique it at the same time. So I actually wrote an article called Critiquing doing what we love. And I think that's been a through line throughout my scholarship around sports, is really thinking about what it means to be able to think critically about something that you also enjoy on a personal level, on an emotional level, and recognize that those two can coexist, that it's not as easy as just sort of dismissing one or the other, but that you need to be able to hold those two in tension. And so that's really continued through my work on the politics of soccer in Spain. I've led now I think it's 6 or 7 study abroads to Spain and Rwanda, starting with South Africa, thinking about the politics of soccer and the use of sport as a tool for economic development and also a tool of diplomacy.
I'm talking soccer with Seattle on the World Stage with Ron Krabel, director of the UW Global Sport Lab. Ron, I know that you also study the harms that may come with hosting World Cup matches. What should we know there?
I think there are lots of concerns around different kinds of human rights issues, questions of over-policing, questions of presence of ICE and federal agents. I think one of the things that people often don't take into consideration is that we think of it as a tournament that's run by FIFA, but it actually involves both FIFA as an international organization, FIFA as a tournament organization, a separate arm of FIFA will run the tournament itself that's based in Miami, but then also local, state, federal, municipal governments, county governments, all have a role to play. The most expensive piece of putting on a tournament is actually security. And that really lands primarily on local governments with a little bit of help from the federal government. And so that's one of the major expenses and also one of the major concerns in terms of what that ends up looking like and who gets caught up in that security dragnet.
If you're just joining us, I'm speaking with Ron Krabel, professor in UW-Bothell's School of Interdisciplinary Arts and Sciences. All sectors of security here in the Puget Sound region tell us they are prepared, Ron. We'll see what that looks like when matches begin. But given the previous World Cups you've experienced and studied, what would you expect to see here in terms of potential clashes between fans or even protesters and those working to enforce the law?
It will certainly be intense. I think we'll see security in and around the stadium that's much greater than what we're used to for other events like Seahawks or Sounders or rain matches. So I certainly think the security presence will be visible and felt, even just by anyone who's in and around the city, sort of down near the stadium and in sort of main tourist gathering areas. I think at the airport, we will probably also see that. I think it remains to be seen whether there will be particular problems. I think one of the things that those of us who are concerned about human rights in sports are quite concerned about is whether there will be the freedom for political expression in and around the stadium, or if they'll attempt to control that as well. So the right to protest is a fundamental right, and whether that will be allowed to carry on during the Cup, both in Seattle but across the host cities, is, I think, an open question. And then, as I mentioned earlier, I think the question of ICE presence is a major one, and many municipalities have taken measures to try to keep that from happening. And there have been sort of mixed messages coming from the federal government versus some of the local organizing committees in different host cities, and also municipal governments.
UW-Bothell Professor Ron Krabel says there is evidence that the fan base is going to be more domestic and less international than expected from a FIFA World Cup. He and his students will be able to tell us more at the end of the summer when they complete a research project they're carrying out during every match hosted in Seattle. Covering the World Cup in Seattle, I'm Denise Whitaker.
Still to come.
The city of Seattle is hoping to crack down on violence on Aurora Avenue.
When the Northwest Politicast returns after this.
Welcome back to the Northwest Politicast. I'm Jeff Pogela. Aurora Avenue in North Seattle has long had a reputation of being something of a dump. Rampant crime, prostitution, and human trafficking, along with drug deals and frequent violence. But on Thursday this past week, city leaders vowed to make a change. And shortly after that briefing, our own Aaron Wright spoke with Jeremy Harris of Como News, who has been covering this issue for a long time.
Jeremy, what did we learn at the meeting today?
Well, we learned sort of the city's path forward on how they want to address some of the violence going on up on Aurora. The solid things that came out of the meeting is the Seattle Department of Transportation is going to implement road closures on some of the side streets there around Aurora Avenue, really between 96th and 108th, which seems to be the core of where all the sex trafficking is going on. We also heard from the city attorney who said she's going to work with trying to get more prosecutors to handle gun cases involving some of the pimps and try and get extreme risk protection orders to try and get guns out of the hands of both pimps and the Johns if they're found up there with guns. And we heard from Police Chief Sean Barnes, who said he's going to direct more officers to go into that area and have a more visible presence, which is exactly what the residents have been requesting. But if you're listening to this and thinking, haven't we heard this stuff before? You're absolutely right. We have. The city has tried strategies like this before up on North Aurora, and it really has not moved the needle in terms of slowing down the sex trafficking and the pimps who are bringing girls up to that area.
And we have certainly heard from the neighbors who say they're fed up. I mean, the first time I can recall neighbors taken to the street and marching. Were they present for this meeting today?
They were. There were several neighbors, most of whom we've heard from over the last several weeks since this sort of shooting spree has started. They were here today. They were sort of cautiously optimistic. Of course, the short-term immediate solution band-aid they wanted was for SDOT to close off those side streets. They got that. SDOT is going to do that. They say that will stop some of the loop trafficking from the Johns who are going through that area. But as for addressing the bigger issues behind sex trafficking, I don't know that these neighbors who came here today have much confidence the city's going to be able to do anything about it. We have a firm timeline. So within the next 2 weeks is what SDOT says. We're hoping some of the neighbors are hoping that they can even get that done before the end of this week. Don't know exactly what day they're going to go in, but they set a firm deadline of within 2 weeks, you'll see road closures. And it won't be every single road because they do have to manage some emergency access issues and throughways. But they are going to close off a good number of those side streets there on Aurora.
That's Como's Jeremy Harris talking with our own Aaron Wright. Meanwhile, a local ad agency is taking a bold stance against sex trafficking along Aurora Avenue and elsewhere. The campaign is called Poison the Fantasy, and it's aimed at showing the realities of sex trafficking. Northwest News Radio's Scott Carty spoke with Alan Brown, and I caution you, the following interview touches on some very sensitive topics and could be triggering to some.
You started this agency a long time ago here in Seattle. You're doing this campaign now. Tell me a little bit about it. Describe what it is that you guys are actually trying to do with it.
Yeah. So thanks, Scott. So just backing up here, the goal of this campaign is to reduce demand for sex trafficking. And also just want to say not all, you know, commercial sex involves trafficking victims, but a large portion of it does. So that's really our starting point with this campaign. And what we did in putting this together, we talked to former buyers, pimps, survivors. And what we know is that men who buy sex generally don't care if the person they're with is being trafficked, or in many cases, if they're underage. So the fantasy in this case for them is the sex act. And because they don't care to humanize the person they're buying from, going down that path with a campaign really doesn't tend to be super effective. But what we do know will stop these guys is the fear that their spouse or their significant other or their kids would find out. And at that point, if that happens, the wheels really come off for these guys and their life is really kind of turned upside down. So Poison the Fantasy really interjects that reality of what could happen to the outcome of their actions. And so the campaign is really these direct first person statements from spouses and significant others and parents and kids on how their lives were turned upside down or destroyed by this. And I know we're on radio, so I'll just kind of describe, you know, the campaign. In this campaign, we're using those stories, but we put them in the same visual language you would find in like sex buying sites or forums. The ads are all type. They have emojis, use bright colors. And it's this really strong juxtaposition of what looks like could be a sexual conversation on one of those sites with this really painfully and powerfully language that is opposite of what that is. And we sign them off. with who they're from, the ex-wife of a sex buyer or the daughter of a sex buyer, and so forth.
And where will people see it here in Seattle?
So in Seattle, it's running on broadcast. So it'll be on some of the broadcast stations in town. We have billboards around town. We have targeted digital ads. We have advertising in bars, in restrooms in bars. We have wild postings. We're going to do projections on buildings on the days of matches are taking place in Seattle, as well as some mobile billboards around town.
Alan Brown, principal of DNA and Stone, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us about the BisexPayPrices.com campaign, Poison the Fantasy.
That was Northwest News Radio's Scott Carty reporting.
Coming up next,
back to the World Cup and some of the security concerns surrounding the games.
With the Northwest Politicast continues after this.
Welcome back to the Northwest Politicast. I'm Jeff Pogela. Here's Marina Rockinger.
The World Cup has kicked off, and our first game here in Seattle is Monday, and security will be extremely tight. Joining us now is ABC News correspondent Alex Stone. And Alex, what can fans expect to see?
Well, it's going to be a lot of security. So 11 host cities, 104 matches, and that's a lot of securing that's going to need to be done, Marina. And then on Monday here in LA, Iran plays, and then they later will play in Seattle. But that with the war in Iran and everything that has been going forward with that today and a possible deal, that brings a whole host of other security issues when they play on Monday here in LA. But one of the big focuses this year is going to be on drones. In each of the cities, we're hearing this. In LA, they're going to be focused on methods for bringing down drones that are seen flying around World Cup events. It is a no-fly zone around World Cup stadiums, the hotels housing the players, any of the fan fest events. All of that is a no-no. And the FBI saying
there will be a zero tolerance policy that we have in effect. And we will be aggressively pursuing violators of those laws.
And in fact, the U.S. Air Marshal Service, which this morning said they are increasing their presence on flights into the U.S. for the World Cup, they're also working on the drone interdiction teams to take down any kind of a threat.
Federal Air Marshals are leading ground intercept teams who will make contact with unauthorized drone users.
I'm speaking with ABC News correspondent Alex Stone. And Alex, my understanding is there's something kind of unique and special going on in Renton.
They have these special trailers of sensors that can tell a police officer exactly where a drone is, alert them to it, and where the pilot is, and they can go immediately there and find the pilot. And they say, look, most drones that are going to be flown and people who are going to be caught probably have done it by mistake, and they're in the wrong area. It's not a terror attack, and the person realizes they made a mistake.
A lot of them might know that you can't fly above a certain altitude, but when it gets much more in depth than that, they really don't have any clear understanding about where they can fly, when they can fly, and the things that they can do.
But they're taking this very seriously. It can be a $100,000 fine for flying a drone around a World Cup event. So the police aren't messing around with this, and they say that they will educate and tell drone pilots, let them know that they can't be in the area, but you can get a really hefty fine with it. But based on what has been seen in the fighting in Iran and in Ukraine and in Russia, the threat of a drone packed with explosives is a real concern. So there is a focus on that. And yeah, here in LA, they say that they really see this as a dry run security wise for the Olympics in 2 years. This is going to be a busy next 5 or 6 weeks of World Cup events, but then it will really be, they'll see what works and doesn't work heading into the 2028 Olympics, when it will be much more condensed and a lot more events all around LA.
That's ABC's Alex Stone talking with our Marina Rockinger. And that'll do it for this episode of the Northwest Politicast. Thank you for spending part of your day with us and following the discussions, debates, and decisions shaping politics and public policy across the Northwest. If you enjoy the show, please subscribe, follow, and leave a rating and a review in Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen. That helps more listeners find us, which helps keep this civil conversation going. You can also share this episode with someone else who cares about the topics we discussed today. I'm Jeff Pogela. Thank you for listening, and we'll be back next week.